For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is March 11th, and we are in Shmuel Beis, and we're about to start Perek Yudal, chapter 14. In the last chapter, we had that Avshalom took revenge for Amnon molesting his sister Tamar, and Avshalom killed Amnon, but then Avshalom ran away because he knew that his father David would not be happy about his having killed Amnon. And he was away for 3 years. And the last thing we had was that David began, he had consolation and nechama over the loss of his son Amnon. And he begins to have an interest in Avshalom coming home. But David doesn't act upon it. So here in Perek Yudal, chapter 14, we begin the story of Avshalom in earnest. Avshalom is eventually going to mount a rebellion against David HaMelech. It's going to be the most painful experience that David goes through as a result of his sin with Bathsheba. But we haven't yet laid all the groundwork for that rebellion. Here we're going to begin that. Vayeda Yoav ben Tsruya ki lev hamelech al Avshalom. Yoav ben Tsruya knew that the heart of the king was on Avshalom, which means that he knew that David HaMelech really wanted Avshalom back, even though David HaMelech wasn't saying anything, he wasn't acting upon it, but Yoav knew that David, given the opportunity, would want Avshalom back. If the right circumstances presented themselves, he would want him back. So Yoav is going to devise a plan to get David to take back Avshalom. Before we go any further, let's talk a little bit about Yoav, so we can understand a little bit about him. Yoav is a complicated personality. Yoav eventually, in the very end of his life, after David HaMelech dies and Shlomo HaMelech takes over, Shlomo HaMelech is going to execute Yoav. And that's what's going to end up happening. But Yoav, it's clear, is a very big tzaddik, and it's clear that he occupies a very lofty place in Olam Haba. The Gemara speaks very, very highly of Yoav, but there are certain things that Yoav does where Yoav has particular ideas and is willing to make sure they happen, even if he knows that David disagrees. And that's what's going to get Yoav into trouble. So far we've had that Yoav killed Avner. We had that. Now there was some justification for that because he argues that he's the Goel Hadam, he is the relative of Amasa, Yoav's brother Amasa, who was killed by Avner. And so Yoav is going to, later on, when he gets put before the Sanhedrin, he's going to successfully defend himself about having killed Avner. But we'll talk about that, Mirtz Hashem, when we get to that story. But Yoav is also going to kill a couple of other people that David would not want him to kill. And that's what's going to get Yoav into trouble. But Yoav ben Tsruya is a big tzaddik, he's a big Talmud Chacham. He is the general of David. And he is one of three brothers, the sons of Tsruya. Tsruya is David's sister, and he is one of three brothers. The one who was killed is Asael, and there is another brother, Avishai, ben Tsruya. And these three brothers are great tzaddikim and great giborim, very powerful people that are that throughout David's reign they are his right hand men. Of course, Asael was killed, so he doesn't um, he, his allegiance to David was cut short. But Yoav and his brother Avishai are very big figures in David's cabinet. Now, Yoav ben Tsruya is David's nephew. He's his sister's son, which makes him a cousin to Avshalom. So he's part of the family. It's not just that he's the general of David, he's also part of the family here. So Yoav here has an idea, and he decides that it is time to bring Avshalom back. He's been away for 3 years. But Yoav also knows that if he just goes to the king and says, you know, you really need to take Avshalom back, he knows that David will be resistant. So Yoav uses his own cleverness to devise a plan to make it happen. And he enlists the help of a wise woman. Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa. Yoav sent to Tekoa. Vayikach misham Isha Chacham. And he took from there a wise woman. We are not told her name. But he gets a wise woman from Tekoa. And he wants her to be the primary player in this drama that he's trying to make happen. Now, the Gemara tells us why Tekoa. All we know about this woman is that she's wise and that she's from Tekoa. That's all we know. And that she's going to pull this off brilliantly, as we will see. Just a brilliant performance that she's going to do. So, the only other thing we know about this place, Tekoa, is that they grew olives there, and it had an abundant amount of olive oil. The Gemara says olive oil promotes chachma. It promotes wisdom. I don't know how. I don't understand exactly what that means, whether it's purely Kabbalistic or whether there's something physiological there, but the Gemara associates olive oil with wisdom. And therefore, the Gemara says, Tekoa was a place where Yoav was likely to find a wise person. And he particularly needed a woman, as we'll see. So he sends to there, and he finds himself a very wise woman who is able to play the part that he needed. Vayomrei leah, and he said to her, Hisabli na, please act as if you are in mourning. V'liv shina vigdei evel, and wear, please, clothing of a mourner. Ve'al tasuchi shemen, do not anoint yourself with oil. Don't smear oil on yourself. The Gemara derives from here that an avel, someone who is in mourning, is not allowed to smear oil on themselves. Because he tells her, I want you to act like you're in mourning. One of the ways that you appear that way, he tells her, is by not smearing oil on yourself. Which was a common thing to do in their day, was to put oil on, so not having oil would be noticeable. And you should be like a woman that for many days have been mourning over someone who passed away. That's what I want you to look like. Then I want you to look like a woman who has lost a loved one for a long time. Uvas el hamelech, and then I want you to come to the king. V'dibart elav kadavar hazeh, and speak to him like the following thing. Vayasem Yoav es hadvarim b'fiha, and Yoav put the words in her mouth. So what are the words? We're going to see, because now we're going to play out the whole story. The Navi doesn't tell it to us twice. Instead, just says that Yoav gave her instructions, and now this is what's going to happen. Now, when she goes before the king, she's going to essentially make up a story. And it's going to be, the purpose of it is going to be to get David to, in a particular frame of mind, that can then be capitalized on to get him to bring Avshalom back. That's the purpose. The purpose is to get David, who right now is in a frame of mind where he's not going to bring Avshalom back, but through what this woman is going to say to him, and they're going to go back and forth, it's going to move him into a frame of mind where he will want to act upon bringing Avshalom back. Now, so Yoav is going to write the script for her. When you send someone before the king with a scripted part to play, Is it likely that the conversation will go exactly as you scripted it? It's nearly impossible, right? It's nearly impossible. You can plan, but how do you know? You know, David might say this, he might say that, he might push this way, he might the subtlety of what's going on. Who knows? So this is why Yoav needed an Isha Chachama. He needed a wise woman because he needed someone who could think quickly on her feet, where he could give her the script and also give her the general idea of what he's looking for so that she can improvise on her feet as David is responding and push the right buttons in order to get to the right place. So this is what I mean. We're going to see a brilliant performance over here, not just an acting performance, which probably could have been done by a lot of people. Acting in itself is a talent, but I wouldn't call it a singular talent. It's a talent. But as someone who can act and at the same time think very quickly on her feet to be able to move the conversation in the direction that Yoav wants it to go, that's where the chachma comes in. That's where the wisdom comes in. And we're going to watch her do it. It's really a fascinating performance.
Aren't they taking a huge risk here of anybody in the court at the time recognizing her and knowing her story's faults? I mean, she could be executed for this.
It's true. It's true she could. I imagine that she was not... You see, she's anonymous in the story. I imagine she wasn't a particular figure that everybody knew.
But she stood out enough for him to ask her.
Well, he sent for her. I mean,
so he sent for her by name. He didn't just...
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he sent for her by name. I mean,
is it the same Tekoa as today, the city Tekoa?
I think so. Where is Tekoa?
I was going to look that up myself.
Where is it?
Up in the North Georgia Mountains.
Right.
Yeah.
Not Georgia. North Israeli.
Oh, sorry, in Israel. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was wondering if Tekoa, Georgia was named after this.
I was wondering if Tekoa in Israel is...
Yeah, yeah. I believe it's supposed to be in the portion of Usher. Usher was the place where they had all the oil. So I believe so. Okay, so now let's follow the interchange. Vatomer ha'isha ha'tekoes al hamelech. The woman from Tekoa said to the king, Vatipol al apeha artsa, and she fell on her face to the ground, Vatishtachu, and she bowed. Vatomer, and she said, Hoshia hamelech, king, save me, help me. Now, there's a curiosity here that it says Vatomer, she said twice. In the beginning of the pasuk, it says the woman said, but it doesn't say what she said. It just says the woman said to the king, and then it says she fell on her face, and she bowed, and she said, king, help me, or save. So what's that first word, vatomer? So different mafarshim say different things, but the Radak writes over here that wasn't even said to the king. That was to get into the king. When she came to the palace, there was a whole bunch of people waiting to see David HaMelech, and she was able to talk her way in to seeing the king. That was her first finesse that she was able to pull off to get in to the king with an urgent matter that otherwise might have been delayed for days. I mean, depending on you know, he's the king, so there could be a whole bunch of different things that had to be taken care of, and who knew when she would get in. So she here you see she's dramatic. She falls on her face. She bows and she says, "Save." So the king said to her, "What is with you? What's going on?" Which is that was a typical thing that David would say. That much can easily be scripted, that he would say those words. And she said, "Avol isha almana ani vayamas ishi." In truth, I am a widow, and my husband died. Now, what's that?
That's
a little redundant.
Okay, so that's redundant. What does it mean? I'm a widow, and my husband died. Obviously, if she's a widow, her husband died. So again, the Radak explains that what this means is I've been a widow for a long time. I lost my husband a long time ago. But now I am feeling the loss of my husband all over again because of what I'm about to tell you. The loss of my husband was bad enough however many years ago it was, but now I'm feeling it all over again because of the following terrible story. And your maid, meaning me, she's referring to herself as David's maid. It's a humble way to speak in front of the king. And your maid has two sons. Vayinatsu shnehem basada, and the two of them fought in the field. Vein matzil beinayim, and there was no one to save between them. There was no one around to intervene. Vayako ha'echad es ha'echad vayames oso, and one struck the other one and killed him. So I had two sons, They got into a fight, and one killed the other one. V'hine kama kol ha-mishpacha al shivchasecha. And now all of the extended family have risen up against your maid. V'yomru, and they're saying, Tni es makei achiv, give us the one who struck his brother, the murderer. U'nimiseo, and we will kill him. B'nefesh achiv asher harag, for the soul of his brother that he killed. Now, let's pause here for a moment. So the rest of the family is telling me, give over your remaining son that we can put him to death. So, first of all, let's just discuss the legality of that. What is there any justification for the family members to kill the brother who murdered his brother?
If it was intentional.
Okay, if it was intentional, but why wouldn't it go to the court? Why would it go to the family?
Goel Hadam.
Okay, so we have the concept of Goel Hadam. Now, Goel Hadam in the Chumash is normally referring to avenging the blood of a relative who was killed by accident, with negligence. You know the classic case in the Chumash that somebody is chopping wood and wasn't careful to make sure that the axe blade was attached securely to the axe handle, and as he's chopping, the axe blade flies off of the handle, it flew off the handle, and there was a person across from him, and the blade hit him and killed him. That's killing by accident, but it's negligent. It wasn't unavoidable. The person was negligent. So in that case, we know that the punishment of the murderer, even though it was accidental murder, he needs to go to an Ir Miklat. He has to go to a city of refuge, and he has to remain there until the Kohen Gadol dies, which could be years and years and years. That's called Golus. He has to go into exile and remain in that city until the Kohen Gadol dies. The incentive for that person to remain in the Ir Miklat is that if he leaves the Ir Miklat, if he walks out of the city, then the relatives, the Goale Hadam, the relatives are allowed to avenge the blood of their murdered relative, and they're allowed to kill this murderer. And that's the Torah permits that system. Now you can ask, why does the Torah make it that system? Why does it promotes a certain amount of anarchy, but it promotes a certain amount of, you know, taking the law into your own hands kind of thing. So you can have that discussion, but we're not going to digress into that discussion now. But we have that halacha in the Torah. That's the rule. The Rambam writes that although the Torah is talking primarily about when murder was done by accident with negligence, however, the Rambam says, what if a person murdered someone deliberately, but he got off on a technicality? The courts were unable to put him to death because of a technicality. The way the warning was given wasn't given 100% properly, so there was a technicality or some other technicality that got him off. The Rambam says that under many circumstances, not all circumstances, but under many of the circumstances of those technicalities, although the court can't put him to death, but the relatives still can. Just as the relatives can put to death a murderer who murdered by accident with negligence, if he leaves the city of refuge, he leaves the Ir Miklat, the relatives are allowed to kill the murderer. So too, a murderer who murders on purpose but gets off on a technicality, the relatives are allowed to kill the murderer. Not only that, but in this case, where the murder was done on purpose but he got off on a technicality, there's no city of refuge. The person is constantly in a state of danger of being killed by the relatives. He's got to constantly watch his back.
The Ir Miklat wouldn't take him?
Even if he went there, it wouldn't help. It wouldn't protect him. They would be allowed to kill him even in the Ir Miklat if he was a willful murderer and got off on a technicality. So he has the worst of both worlds. He's allowed to be killed by the relatives, and the city of refuge will not protect him.
There's no point in going there.
Right, there's no point in going there. He may as well just just watch his back. Right?
So the whole thing with witnesses doesn't even apply here at all.
There have to be witnesses, because if there's no witnesses, then how do you know he killed him?
Right. Right, but right? If he knows by negligence he's got to get there.
Yeah, but it's saying the relatives can't kill him just because they think he murdered him. Right, that there's got to be witnesses.
But it sounds like it's a vigilante sort of thing.
Yes, but there still have to be witnesses.
Because
the warning is for Basedin to kill him. What's that?
It's never brought to the court, though.
Because they got off on a technicality. In a killing by accident, it is brought to the court, and the court rules he has to go to an Ir Mikla. Yeah.
So in this case, where there were no witnesses and no warning, the only way anyone would know that one brother had killed the other is if the surviving brother confessed and everyone believed him.
Right. And that should not be a good enough reason to kill him, because you can't trust his confession. The rule in the Torah is that a confession, although it's not that a confession can't be held against you, but a person is not held to the same standard of punishment in a situation where he confesses in many cases. So it would be difficult over here for this to be legally justifiable for them to kill him. In other words, if there were witnesses that saw it happen, then, but there was a technicality, so the brother wasn't put to death by the courts, then there is a legal reason for them to go and kill the brother. But if not, it would be difficult to justify it. Right. So here, the way she presents the story, it's kind of ambiguous, because she doesn't say explicitly that there was no witness. What she says is there was no one to break up the fight. There could have been witnesses who just weren't able to break up the fight. For example, let's say they were far away. They were able to see, but they were too far away to intervene. Or let's say they weren't strong enough to intervene.
Yeah.
You know, you could theoretically have witnesses there who were unable to intervene. So she leaves it unclear. She leaves it very unclear whether the action that the relatives want to take is legally permitted or not. This is a deliberate ambiguity. This is part of the brilliance of what she's doing. So she's making a case, presenting to the king as a fait accompli that they're going to kill my son, and she deliberately leaves it vague as to whether they have the right to or not. Now, the king could zero in on the legality. That's what he could do, right? He could start to discuss with her, well, were there witnesses? Right? That's what he could do. But she's going to deliberately redirect him away from the legal question and more to the emotional question. That's what she's trying to do over here. And this is why Yoav needed specifically a woman and not a man. If it would have been a man, then the whole thing would have centered around the legality question. Yoav wants her to redirect David to the emotional part of things, because he's trying to bring out David's emotions for Yoav, for Avshalom. That's the deliberate attempt over here. So watch what she does. So she says, so far, you could discuss the legality. However, she says, let's just read that one more time. I'm going back a little, because I stopped the middle of the sentence that she's quoting the relatives as saying. I'm starting from the word Vayomru in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vayomru, and they said, Tnihas makei achiv, give us the one who killed his brother, unimisehu, and we will kill him. Benefesh achiv asher harag, for the soul of his brother that he killed. Vinashmida gamas hayoresh, and we will destroy also the inheritor. Who's the remaining inheritor of my deceased husband?
This one son.
If he goes, if he's killed, then who's going to inherit my husband?
The people are going to kill him.
The relatives. So there's an ulterior motive, she says. V'chibu es gachalti asher nishara, and they will extinguish my coal that still remains, in other words, the little vestige of family that I have, levilti sim liishi shame usheiris al pnei adama, in order to not give my husband any name or any remnant on the face of the earth. That he's going, that now with all the inheritors dying, then essentially it'll be like my husband just was never here. And that'll be that, and it will be done. So she immediately moves the question into an emotional thing. Look what they're doing, and I don't trust their motives. They're saying, give us the relative so we can kill him because he killed his brother. Meaning they're claiming the mantle of Goel Hadam, of the avenging relative. We can avenge the blood. But I say that they're out for money. Mm-hmm. And they're going to completely wipe out my husband's remaining future. So, is the king moved? Now, remember that David HaMelech, in addition to being the king, he's also the greatest Torah scholar of his generation. Which means that when a legal case comes before him, he has to rule in legal matters. The rule, if any time a judge is judging a case, he has to divest himself as much as possible from the emotions of the case. A court case has to be based on what the Torah says. It can't be affected by emotions. That's a very difficult thing for judges to do, but they have to. That's part of being a judge. So, is David moved? Vayomer HaMelech al Ha'isha, the king said to the woman, L'chi le'beiseich, go to your house, V'ani atzaveh aloyech, and I will command about you. I will send word that your son should be protected.
So we're supposed to understand that he actually could judge this particular situation when he is totally right into it. It doesn't seem
he doesn't judge it. See, he doesn't. He doesn't discuss with her the legality. He just says to her, okay, I heard what you're saying, I'll take care of it. So he says to her, so you go home, I'll take care of it. Which means that she was successful in getting him away from the legal side of it. He's not even discussing that. He just says, I'll take care of it. Which means that he at least has been somewhat moved. Mm-hmm. Now, I wouldn't call this an outpouring of emotion. Right? He didn't say to her, oh, I'm so sorry. He just said, okay, go home, I'll take care of it. Now, that's nice. So she has been partially successful, but not to the extent that she wants. Now, I'm not sure at what point she's ad-libbing. I'm not sure at what point she's improvising on her feet what Yoav wanted. But we can see already that she is going to continue to try to move David further and further away from the legal part of it and closer to the emotional part of it. Vatomer ha'isha tekoes el ha'melech. So the Tekoa woman said to the king, now here she's very careful, but she uses a little bit of a strong tactic. And she says, Alai Adoni HaMelech HaAvon V'Abeis Avi, the sin will be on me and on the house of my father, V'HaMelech V'Chiso Naki, and the king and his throne will be clean from sin. So the Mefarshim explain over here that what she's saying to him is that if you don't stop it, in other words, you're saying you're going to send word and protect my son. But I'm afraid that's not enough because by the time the messenger gets there, it might be too late. Perhaps one relative will hear about your decree, others will not. I don't have full confidence in your statement, I'll take care of it, that my son will actually be protected. I'm looking for more. So if in the end my son is actually killed, the sin will be on me and my father's house, and the king and his throne will be clean of sin. The Mefarshim say she was saying this in a euphemistic way, because as out of respect for the king, she didn't want to say to him what she really meant, which is, if in the end my son is killed, after you've told me that you'll take care of it, then the sin will be on your head.
Right.
So instead she says, the sin will be on my head, on the house of my father, and you will be clean. And she's turning it around, but David understood what she meant. David understood full well what she meant. So here, it's a little bit of chutzpah.
It is.
It's a little bit of chutzpah, but she's careful to word it properly. And she words it the way you're supposed to word things when you talk to a king, which is that you reverse it. She evidently felt she could get away with a little bit of chutzpah because since the king is already at least partially focused on her emotion, then you know how it is. When a person is in an emotional state, they'll say things and act in ways that wouldn't normally be acceptable. We let people get away with things when they're very distraught, right? A person's very, very distraught and they say something that isn't very nice. You give them a pass because, you know, they're very distraught. So here, she felt she could get away with a little bit of chutzpah because she was very distraught and the king had recognized her distress. So she says this in order to push the king to make a better guarantee for her son. Mm-hmm. Pasuk Yod, verse 10. Vayomer HaMelech, so the king said, Hamidaber Elayech, the one who is speaking to you, meaning your relative who is threatening you, Vahaveso Elai, you should bring him to me. Now, you doesn't mean her, because the king knew full well that she probably didn't have the power to schlep the relative. He turns to one of his attendants and he says, you should go and bring that person to me. And then he turns back to her and he says, and he will no longer touch you. So now the king has become more invested. He's not just saying, I'll take care of it. He's actually in front of her, turning to one of his attendants. The way you know this is because vahave so is the way you would say it in the to a male, not to a female. It's in the masculine, not in the feminine. You, masculine, should bring him. If it was her, it wouldn't say vahave so. So he's turning to one of his attendants and says, okay, I'm putting you in charge. I want you to go and don't just tell him that I said to leave the boy alone. I'm telling you to bring him to me and I will tell him that he is not to touch that boy. So he tells that to the woman. So David has now become much more invested. He's saying, we're going to bring that person here and I'm going to make it very clear to him that he is to leave your son alone. Now she's not done yet. She's moved him further, but she wants an even greater emotional investment from David. Vatomer, and she said, Yizkar na hamelech es Hashem Elokecha, let the king remember Hashem, your God. Meharbas goel hadam l'shaches, from allowing an increase of avenging blood, of avenging relatives to kill. V'lo yashmidu es b'ni, and they shouldn't destroy my son. The Mefarshim explain over here that she here was invoking the rule in the Torah of Tachin Lecha HaDerech. The rule is that if a person murdered by accident, but with negligence, and he has to run to the Ir Miklat, the rule is you should prepare the road. The roads in Israel, in ancient Israel, the best paved roads, the roads that were free of potholes, that were free of obstacles, that were the best paved roads, and the roads that were best marked were the ones that led to the Ir Miklat, to the cities of refuge. It has to be very clearly marked so that a person who does kill by accident has an easy time getting to where he has to go and shouldn't get confused, shouldn't get lost. And therefore, all across the country, Miklat, Kosova, Prashas, Drachim. Every time you came to a crossroads, there was always a sign that said, Miklat, City of Refuge, this way. Everywhere. They were written all over the place. So she's saying to him, the Torah itself, although the Torah allows for a relative to kill the murderer, but the Torah puts a great emphasis on giving the murderer a chance to get away, to prevent the relatives from killing. It should only be an incentive for him to go there and an incentive for him to stay there. But the Torah doesn't really want the relatives to kill the murderer. What the Torah would prefer is that the murderer live out his life in Golus, not be killed. The killing is just an incentive. So she's saying to him, remember what Hashem, your God, wrote in the Torah of trying to decrease, not increase, the killing of the murderers by the Goalei Hadam. So remember that, and please do more. Vayomer, and he said, Chai Hashem, I swear by the life of Hashem, imi po misaras b'nei chartza, if any hair on the head of your son will fall to the ground. So here, she got David to be completely, fully, emotionally invested. It is no longer a question of I'll take care of it. It's no longer of delegating it to somebody else. David has actually taken an oath that this boy will be protected by the crown. I will not let it happen. So this is what ultimately what she wanted him to be.
Does the son need to go to an Ir Miklat then? He needs to get there without being killed, right?
But he didn't do it by accident. So there's no Ir Miklat over here that would help him.
Oh, so he's got to live out his life just anywhere.
But David is saying, I'm going to stop. He's going to be under the protection of the crown.
The son who doesn't exist.
Right, right.
How do we know that it was not killing by negligence?
Well, she said they got into a fight. I guess you're right. I guess in theory, she didn't discuss all the details. Perhaps it was.
That doesn't mean he set out to.
Right, right. It could be he meant only to hit him, and he killed him. It is possible. The language of "and he struck him and killed him" sounds like it was premeditated murder, but perhaps not. I mean, again,
it's vague.
It's vague. Again, she's not. David could have gone down the legal side of things over here and really dissected the case, but she kept him from doing that. She redirected him.
Kind of reminds you of Cain and Hevel. They got in a fight in a field,
right,
too.
Right. But there we know Cain did it on purpose. Once they got into a fight, Cain killed him.
I know. That's kind of what I'm thinking when I'm reading
this. Yeah. Very similar in a field. Right. Right. Very good point. Okay. So she got David where she wants him. So he's really set up now. Vatomer Ha'isha Yudbeis 12. Vatomer Ha'isha, the woman said, Tedaber na shivchasa al Adoni HaMelech Davar. Let your maid say something to the king. Vayomer, and he said, Daberi, speak. So now she says, let me say something. And he says, speak. Now here what you expect is that she's going to spill the beans and just say, you know, this was all a setup. It's not really true. Mm-hmm. And, right? But that would ruin the whole thing. Because he's emotional now. So you want to capitalize on emotion. You don't want to make him feel that he was duped or tricked.
Right.
Or, right? That would not be wise. So now what? So now she's got to move him from her son to his son. Because what she wants from him is to say, look, it's true Avshalom killed Amnon, but have some mercy on Avshalom anyway. Even though Avshalom killed Amnon. Just like you're having mercy on my son. My son murdered my son murdered his brother. He's a murderer. But you're having Rachmanis, you're having compassion. So now she wants to shift that compassion from the fictitious son to the real Avshalom. So she says, "Vatomer Ha'isha," the woman said, "V'lama chashavta kazo salam Elokim? Why would you think anything like this would have happened in the nation of Hashem, that a brother would kill a brother, and that the relatives would want to kill the brother for killing the brother? Why would you have thought that anybody would act this way?" Now, David doesn't answer this question, and it's a rhetorical question. What's the answer to that question? Why would David so easily believe that such a thing could happen?
Because
it happened to his family, right? So she's pointing out to him, without saying so, that you realize that you're predisposed to believing my story, right?
She's saying it's not true?
She didn't say it's not true. She just said, why are you believing me so easily?
Okay.
Right? So right there, she's now gotten him to think. David's a smart man. He's no fool. He would right away make the association to the fact that it happened within his own family. So he's not surprised by this behavior. It happens. Brothers get into fights. They kill each other. And then relatives want to take revenge. Avshalom was taking revenge for what Amnon did to Tamar. I mean, all of that, the revenge, the murder, everything it had just happened in the story.
It's interesting she uses God's name in there. It's a real emotional
thing. Yeah, okay. Umidaber ha-melech ha-davar ha-zeh ke-ashem. And now, this is hard to translate, but the way Rashi explains it is, let the king not say that what he said was really a mistake. And let the king not retract what he said. Livilti hashiv hamelech es nidcho. That the king would not return his own banished relative, his own banished one, meaning Avshalom. So he or she makes she completes the circle, and she says that. So let the king not say that my words were in error, I wasn't really thinking when I said what I said. Don't allow yourself to not allow your thinking to now apply to your own banished one, to Avshalom. Let it flow now from where you are to Avshalom.
Is she alluding to the fact that what she has just done is a made-up story?
She's going to get to it. She will eventually make it clear. At this point, it could still be real, and nevertheless, she's just trying to include Avshalom, or it could be false. But she hasn't yet actually said it's false.
This all seems very distasteful.
This is all Yoav's. Okay, well, you'll see. Hold on.
Why is she doing it? I know why Yoav wants it done.
Good. Good question.
Why exactly does Yoav want it done? Why does Yoav care that much?
Okay, what?
He wants his cousin back.
No, there's got to be something in it for him. No, there's got to be something in it for him.
Okay, hold on. All these things, we're going to tackle it. We won't get into all of it tonight. But it's a fair question what's in it for her. It's a fair question why is Yoav doing this. And...
Avshalom was slated to be the next king, right?
Well.
At this point?
No, because Shlomo HaMelech has been born.
Right, but as far as people know,
well, we haven't
he's
got
the firstborn.
Because Amnon is already dead.
Right.
No, because Kilav from Abigail is also alive. No, but Avshalom is going to be the most charismatic, as we'll see later. But that hasn't happened yet. That has not yet happened. Then she says, Kimos Namus, because we're all going to die. We all die. Everybody dies. V'chamayim ha-nigarim arza, like water that is poured on the ground. That's an incredible analogy. You know, water gets poured on the ground. You can't get the water back. It gets poured on the ground. It's gone. We all die. Asher lo yayasefu, that it will no longer be gathered up. When the water is poured on the ground, it's gone. V'lo yisa elokim nefesh. The king, the Hashem, will not lift a soul, which means he will not spare any souls. Everybody's going to die, and everybody's going to pay for what they did in this world in the next world. V'chashav machashavos. And he will consider thoughts. In other words, Hashem will consider all of that what happened when a person was alive. So, I'm sorry, V'chashav machashavos is referring to David. And think thoughts, levilti dach mimenu nidach, that there should be no banished person banished from you, the king. Meaning that it's true, Avshalom may have murdered, but that's going to be taken care of by Hashem. There's no need for you to add to Avshalom's punishment. He'll get punished by Hashem. Everybody dies, and we all have to pay for it. If he doesn't do teshuva, then that'll be up to Hashem. But you don't need to continue to have him banished. V'atah now, Ashabasi the Daber al Melech Adoni Esadavar Hazeh, that which I came to speak to my master, the king, this matter. Why did I do this? Now she's admitting that it was a made up story. Ki Yeruni Ha'am, because the nation made me fear, meaning they made me think that if I just came to you to plead Avshalom's case, you wouldn't listen. Vatamar Shivchascha, so your maid said, meaning to herself, I said to myself, Adabra Noel Amelech, I'll speak to the king, meaning I'll make up a story to the king. Ulaya Samelech is Devarama, so maybe the king will do the word of his maid. In other words, by coming to you with a different story, maybe that will get you, the king, to do what I'm asking and then be able to apply that to your son, to Avshalom. Because perhaps the king will listen to save his maid from the hand of that man, meaning the fictitious relative. Lashmido Sives Bani Yachad, destroy me and my son together, Minachalas Elokim, from the portion of Hashem. So again, I was hoping that you would feel compassion for my whole story. Vatomer shivchascha, so your maid said, Yena dvar Adoni hamelech lemincha, let the words of my master the king be as a mincha. Here means mincha can mean a present, a gift, but here it means like minucha, like as a comfort, right? Ki kamalach elokim, because like an angel of God, Kein Adoni hamelech, so is my master the king, lishmoa hatova hara, to listen to the good and to the bad, Vashem elokecha yihimach, and may Hashem your God be with you. End of her performance.
Has she heard an angel though coming down just to do that particular
thing? No. This is a real woman.
but it could be in a bodily form.
No. This is a real person. We have no reason to believe
this. Has she admitted in any of this that this was a fake story?
She doesn't say it outright, but he's smart enough to figure it out. She said enough that she knew he would figure it out. It's not easy to trick David. That was a very, very wise person himself.
But he's been tricked a few times now. This is nothing new.
When we found David being misled was he was misled in the whole thing with Bathsheba, but that was his own fault.
Yeah, and right? Then again with...
Then we found with Amnon and Tamar, but that was a result of what he did.
Again, his emotions were played on. Right. You know? I mean, this is going down over.
But that was all Hashem wanting that to happen with David. And that was, you know, that was here. This was Yoav trying to get Avshalom back, which was not part of the punishment to David.
But it's going to end up being because Avshalom is going to rebound.
Well, we're going to see. Right. Okay, we're going to see about that. That is true. Okay, but we haven't gotten that still several years down the line.
Why does it keep referring to her as a woman from Tekoa several times instead of saying, and the woman said?
Yeah, I think every time it says that, it's to emphasize her wisdom.
Yeah.
I think we're trying to make it clear. Look at the wisdom. I mean, you see it as you go through it. It's really, when I was reading this before, I was preparing, it's just incredible how well she does what she has to do. It's really. I mean,
but it's sad. It's sneaky and underhanded. Yeah, and it's taking advantage of a person who's lost two sons, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, this is amazing.
Now,
her idea. I mean,
now, what is David's reaction? Now he realizes now the whole thing, but his emotions have been played upon. He realizes that emotionally he would have saved this woman's son, despite the fact that he's a murderer. And he realizes that it's not a big leap to apply mm-hmm. that to Avshalom. He's also been duped.
Yeah.
So what does he say? Vayan hamelech vayomer lo isha. And the king answered and he said to the woman, Al na sechachadi mimeni davar. Do not hold anything back from me. Asher anochi shoel osach, that which I ask you. Meaning, I'm going to ask you something, I'd like you to answer me honestly. Vatomer ha'isha, the woman said, Yedaber na adoni hamelech. Let my master the king speak. So this in itself is, you see David's humility. David didn't have to say to her, please tell me the truth. Mm-hmm. He could have commanded her. He could have threatened her. He could have done anything. He's the king. But instead, he doesn't scold her. He doesn't get angry at her. He just says, do me a favor, answer my next question. And she says, okay, fine. So he really treats her with dignity. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Hayad Yoav itach b'chol zos? Is the hand of Yoav with you in all of this? So David realized that some non-named woman from Tekoa is not going to come here and pull this shtick. He figured it out. He knows that it's got to be someone on the inside, and most likely it is Yoav. So he says to her, is Yoav involved in all this? Vatan ha'isha, and the woman answered, Vatomer, she said, Chinav shecha adoni ha'melech, I swear by your soul, my master the king, im ish lehimin ulehasmil, this word im ish, if there is a man, they translate it like, is it possible to go right and to go left? Mikol asher dibra adoni ha'melech, from all that my king, my master the king spoke. In other words, it's impossible to get away from the scrutiny of my master the king. You can't move away right or left from your scrutiny. Ki avdecha Yoav hu tzivani, for your servant Yoav, he's the one who commanded me. Notice the difference between her and Uriah Achiti. What did Uriah say about Yoav? My master Yoav. Right? She says, your servant Yoav. And she knows what the right thing to say is. For who sum befi shivchascha, and he put in the mouth of your maid Ace Claude Varma Elo all these things. So she admits what happened. Now, but she goes on to defend Yoav. Livavur sabeves peneha davar, in order to sabev comes the word like sivivon, to go around, in order to not circumvent, but to bring about, like to well, let's
it's
how about a little yeah, but let's say it a little nicer.
to bring about
roundabout way, right? To bring about in a roundabout way this thing, Asa avdecha Yoav es hadavar hazeh. Yoav did this thing. V'adoni chacham, my master is wise. My master, the king, is wise. Kechachmas malach ha'elokim, like the wisdom of an angel of Hashem. Ladas es kol asher ba'aretz, to know everything in the land. So you figured it out, but that is what happened.
So that's just a whole lot of flattery.
You're not too enthralled with this woman, are you?
Well, it's a scheme.
Yeah, it is a scheme.
It's a scheme.
It is a scheme.
You know, so she's just wrapping it up with a lot of flattery. Basically, he was duped, so much for his having the wisdom of a malach. You know, I mean, he was duped by this woman from who knows where.
He seems
you know.
To be duped by relatives more than anyone else.
I don't know.
The more they know him, the more they know how to dupe him.
Vayomer HaMelech al Yoav, and the king said to Yoav, Hineinu asisa es hadavar hazeh, behold, you have done this thing. Valech hashev es hanar es Avshalom, so go and bring back the lad Avshalom. So, okay, you win.
Which shows that Yoav is standing there the whole time.
No, not necessarily. The Navi is just skipping over here.
But we know at least one other man is present hearing this.
So yeah, there's probably
saying,
all.
So what he's saying is, go ahead, if you can deceive me, but prove that you're right, then will justify the means.
Okay, all right, but I don't think Yoav was there at the time. I think that would have torpedoed his whole plan. I think he deliberately was not present at the time, and then here with we're just skipping the
intervening.
Go get him.
Yeah, right.
Well, we don't really know that, you know.
Yeah, it's the implication is he was not there because the discussion when he says there was Yoav with you and she says yes, Yoav, you know, it doesn't.
I'll get that. All right.
Vayipol Yoav el panav arza vayishtachu. So Yoav fell to his face and he bowed. Vayivarach as hamelech, and he blessed the king. Vayomer Yoav, and Yoav said, Hayom yada avdecha, today your servant knows ki matzasi chein beinecha adoni hamelech, that I have found favor in your eyes, the king, asher asa hamelech es devar avdecha, avdecha, that the king has done the word of your servant. So I appreciate that you have decided to do this. We'll do one more pasuk, and then we're going to stop for this evening. Vayakam Yoav vayelech Geshura, Yoav got up and went to Geshur. Vayavei es Avshalom Yerushalayim, and he brought Avshalom to Yerushalayim. Okay, so Yoav's plan is successful. Yoav's plan is successful. And the woman from Tekoa has been very successful in her performance. David does not react negatively so far and goes along with what Yoav said. Now, the perek started off, the way the chapter began was, Yoav ben Tsruya knows that the king's heart is on Avshalom. So he knows that. That's the way it starts.
We don't know how.
Well, the previous pasuk at the end of the last parak said that the king had begun to feel for Avshalom. So Yoav, I guess, you know, he could tell. He was able to tell from, you know, like you say, he's a relative, he was able to tell. But what is not clear, which is really the crux of the matter, is what is Yoav's motivation? There are several possibilities. It could be that he simply wants to reunite a father and a son. It could be it's purely out of love.
No
for
vote.
What?
Oh, no vote for that.
No vote for that one? It is possible.
Yoav is way too wily for this.
I don't know. It's possible. It's possible that he simply wants to reunite a father and a son. That's possible.
You could do it without being deceptive. Can you not?
Well,
he
didn't think that David would simply take back, because David would be, he felt that David would be stuck on the technical part of it. He's a murderer. I'm not going to be compassionate to a murderer. That's where David was until here.
Yes and no, because he had a son who was a rapist, and he didn't go and make him do what the law told him to do in that case either. I'm sorry.
The king has to.
Well, you know, he did. I mean,
he could have made him, forced him to marry her.
Right, that's true. Yeah,
and
but
he didn't.
Okay, that's true. I mean, he was no longer really physically able to marry. But remember, because
right.
She mutilated
took care him. Of, she yeah. took care of it
right.
herself.
Yeah, but that was before David. Okay, but anyway, so it is possible that Yoav has David's best interest in mind. It's also possible that Yoav likes Avshalom. And he just wants to bring Avshalom back, not for David's sake, but for Avshalom's sake, that he wants to bring Avshalom back to Yerushalayim. That's also a possibility. So it could be that he likes David, it could be he likes Avshalom. And the third possibility is that there's something that he sees that he'll get out of this, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not so clearly evident. What would he get out of bringing Avshalom back to Yerushalayim? What is there in it for Yoav for that to happen?
I think what's making me skeptical is Aaron, who was known for getting people together for many years, right? That was what the trait he was known for, bringing peace between people. Mm-hmm. You never hear of him having to resort to this kind of deception
to
get it done.
No, but he does resort to saying things that are true but weren't actually said. He does, the Medrash says, he would go and say...
he does it himself. He doesn't get a third party.
No, it's true. True,
but he says things that were true.
He's really upset that she's really... I know she's really upset. She doesn't want to be in a fight with
so
you. She really loves
back,
you.
If he was being an emissary and going back and forth between Avshalom and David, I would feel better for him, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay.
The way in which it's done... still doesn't sit okay. well with
okay.
me.
Okay. So again, we're going to have to see what Yoav's intentions were, but we're not going to know this for a little while. This is something which we have to keep in our minds that ultimately Yoav is the one who gets Avshalom back to Yerushalayim. Now we're going to have to see as we move on when we see further actions of Yoav. What motivation for this would be consistent with the future actions of Yoav. We're going to see that the future actions as Yoav are not necessarily going to fit with the scheming that right now you're all thinking. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the future actions of Yoav actually would seem to indicate that he's not so he's not such a great friend of Avshalom, and really. It has a stronger feelings for David than for Avshalom. We're going to see as we move along over here what's going to happen. Bear in mind as well that at the end of the rebellion, Avshalom is going to be killed. By whom?
Yoav.
Yoav is the one who's going to put Avshalom to death in the end of the story.
That's also a problem at the time.
Because David is going to say, don't put him to death, and Yoav is going to kill him anyway. Right. So that's going to be one of the cases where Yoav does what he feels is right. Over what David
sometimes
feels is right.
People do things because they feel guilty that they caused it to happen.
We'll discuss that when we get to it.
Why did the wise woman do what she did?
Okay, that's a good question. The thing is, we know nothing about this woman. That's the interesting thing. We know nothing about this woman. But it would seem to me that if the wise woman went along with it, then it couldn't have been a foolish thing to do. Meaning, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was altruistic, but it wasn't foolish because she's a wise woman and would not have gone along with a foolish plan. That she would not have done. Now, I see that what we're going to have to do before we discuss Yoav again is I'm going to have to give you more of the background of the greatness of Yoav because right now is a little bit too.
Yeah,
but you got.
I'm not sure with her if what you said that just. Besides being banished or put to death, but she's also putting at stake if she ever really has a matter that she needs to bring to the king, will he ever believe
her? That's a good point.
I think that's probably remote. I think she gets a lot of brownie points in her own mind for being selected for this job to go see the king to see if she can pull it off. This is going to be a big feather in her cap, and she's probably getting paid a lot. I mean, this is real recognition of her kachma. Okay, I'm picking you, to carry out this charade.
All right. The fact that her name is not mentioned would appear that she was not out for fame. It wasn't an ego trip, because, otherwise the Navi would...
I don't think we have to look very hard for why she would do it.
Okay.
But we're gonna
see that Yoav is a big person. He's not... Yoav is not a scoundrel. Yoav is a very big person, a very good person. Where we find that Yoav fails is in deciding matters against David. That David decides one way, he decides another way, and actually acts upon it. That's what we find that Yoav is taking the task for. So we're going to see. But the fact is, he does trigger Avshalom's return to Yerushalayim.
If I'm pretending, so to speak, that I'm David, okay? And I could be very well thinking Avshalom is banished, so that's like death. So he's kind of dead. So now I've already had three deaths, so I only have one more to worry about. Where if I bring him back to life...
I really have four. I've lost the baby.
You've lost the baby.
Tamar. Yeah. Right. Amnon. Avshalom. Which, okay. Those are the four.
So then maybe he thinks...
It's done.
Maybe I should bring him back, because then it's like bringing him back to life.
Okay, good.
Where right now, he's kind of like dead. And also, if I bring him back, then his stepbrother's relatives could come after him, could they not?
In theory.
In theory, they could get him, because it was purposeful, and so he doesn't have an Er Miklat to run to.
Right. It's the same story as with this woman.
So I would be thinking, if I was him, if I really love Avshalom, I don't want him to come back because I'm putting his life in peril.
Good. Okay. So we have to see. We're going to see that Avshalom's return to Yerushalayim is not smooth. That's going to be next week's discussion. We'll see how it's actually rather difficult to understand exactly what his return to Yerushalayim was all about. And how Yoav reacts to that is also very interesting. It's going to be the next part of the story.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.